It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe it's July 17th and 18th, depending on when you're listening to this. Both days, Saturday and Sunday, air after the 9 o'clock news, and we also rebroadcast the shows on AnyDelta.com's website. Our website, AnyDelta.com, we have a radio section with about a dozen years of radio shows. Last week's guest was Chuck Lloyd, who's the president of the White Mountains Community College, and we have featured this summer and spring all of the local presidents of the community college and why the community college system is so instrumental to the education of our New Hampshire residents, both young and old. Chuck did a great job. But we're going back to our core responsibilities, at least mine, and that is oral health. And with me this weekend is Dr. Joe Arante, who is our Vice President of Clinical Strategies and Provider Network. So Joe has a long, distinguished career, both as a practicing dentist, as a CEO of an insurance company, CEO of a dental service organization, as a professor at Columbia University, has also been CEO of our software company called Previsor, which powers our program called the Health and Wellness Program, and now has taken on the pretty critical responsibility of Vice President of Clinical Strategy. So it makes sense that Joe addresses a topic today that I know I get a lot of questions on, and that is the topic of oral cancer and perhaps ways ultimately that dentists can help detect that. So let's start, I guess, with the landscape, Joe. What are some of the causes of oral cancers?
Well, there's the obvious ones like tobacco use, but you don't necessarily have to be a tobacco user to get oral cancer. And then there's different types of tobacco. You know, smokers of cigarettes, cigars, and pipes are about six times more likely to get oral cancer than a non-smoker. But smokeless tobacco or chewing tobacco users are 50 times more likely to get oral cancer than non-users because of its proximity to the lips and gums, and it's static there. It stays there for a long time. Another risk factor for oral cancer is family history of cancer, excessive sun exposure. Human papillomavirus is another exposure to that is another risk factor for it. And in fact, there is a big push to get HPV vaccinations done to help during your teen years to help with that, to help reduce the risk of that. But all of that is said, all of that, having said all that, it's important to note that 25% of all oral cancers occur in people who do not smoke and who do not drink alcohol occasionally. So it's really important to get evaluated for oral cancer periodically. And that's usually, and most oral cancers are actually diagnosed as part of a dental examination. So they're often found by dentists and watched for a period of time and then biopsied within a couple of weeks if it hasn't gone away. And any lesion that's hanging around more than a couple of weeks would normally be suspicious.
Well, let's pause on that, and we're going to return to that because I'd love to hear in more detail, you know, the dentist's role in identifying, you know, potential, you know, oral cancer. But getting back to the smokeless tobacco as well as HPV, so in minor league baseball, no longer can players chew chewing tobacco, and as soon as the last players that are grandfathered in at Major League Baseball, they'll be in the same boat. So, why is smokeless tobacco 50 times more likely to get oral cancer than non-user? What's in it that is creating this? Because there is some scary and intentionally scary videos that I know I used to play with to my younger sort of Babe Ruth level baseball team, so they wouldn't get started on in that, and basically, you know, players losing half their face through oral cancer. So why is this so virulent?
Well, there, you know, tobacco has carcinogens in it, and that's why it's one of the leading, smoking is one of the leading causes of lung cancer as you inhale that smoke. And so and smokeless tobacco, it's just sitting there on the lips and gums, depending on where you hold it. And so it's just in constant contact with the soft tissue, which is really creates havoc with, you know, the potential to get cancer.
Wow. So I think professional baseball did a great job in getting that out of the game. Now, the human papillomavirus or HPV, I know that we have communicated with our dentists to try to communicate that to their their patients that are teenagers. Like, it seems to be a little controversial. Is that more because of sort of the live free or die mentality, or is there something behind the scenes with regard to HPV exposure?
Well, I think, you know, part of the reason it's maybe a little controversial and maybe some people don't like to speak about it is HPV is also associated with cervical cancer in women. And so people get a little uptight talking about those kinds of things. And vaccinations in general can be controversial. And so I think it's important, though, to have a frank conversation with your dentist about the likelihood of getting HPV exposure and how it happens and all those kinds of things in your particular situation. It's important to get vaccinated early as well, because in your teen years, it's much more effective. As you get to be over 26 or 27 years old, it becomes less effective and usually requires booster shots and things like that. So early on is better if possible.
Great. And I learned that when I was communicating it to our participating dentist. So let's now take a step back to, okay, so you're a dentist. What does a dentist do either during the oral exam or as it closes to detect potential oral cancer, and then what, and if he or she believes that there may be something there, what are the next steps?
Well, visual inspection is usually, and there are some devices that help augment your visual inspection, and they're not necessary because you can just visually inspect. There are areas of the mouth that are more likely. The sides of the tongue, the floor of the mouth are often more likely, and that's why often they'll wrap a little piece of gauze around the tip of your tongue and tug on your tongue a little bit and pull it out and off to the side a little bit to inspect those areas. And they'll also palpate, and any lumps, bumps, or any sores or anything like that that you have, if there's not an apparent reason for it, if it's not bilateral, meaning on both sides, it's likely to be suspicious. And the typical thing that you would do, unless you see something that's really remarkable, you would wait a couple weeks and tell the patient, if that's still there, you need to let me know. You know, point it out to the patient, show them where it is. If that's still there, let me know, and we probably ought to get you to an oral surgeon, let them biopsy it. Some dentists will biopsy it themselves, but often we'll let an oral surgeon biopsy it, and then they'll run some tests on it and see what kind of lesion it is.
Now, as a general dentist, they would do the referral, but are there other steps that they might do if they suspect, or is it an immediate referral? I mean, you just said that sometimes general dentists may take it the next step. So how does that work? Is that just individual preference?
Yeah, I think it's individual preference whether they're comfortable doing the biopsies, whether they have a relationship with a lab that will examine the lesion or the biopsied specimen. They also are very usually the first thing you do is, unless it's something remarkable, you wait a couple of weeks because they often go away. If it's some, you know, let's say by accident a patient bites their cheek, the inside of their cheek. Well, they'll have what looks like a lesion there, like a sore, but it goes away within a week or 10 days. And so if it's there 2 weeks later and it hasn't changed, or if it's gotten larger, then that's something that you want to get looked at really aggressively.
Great. So this is good timing because we're going to go to commercial break. We may even hear one of our great Delta Dental commercials that everybody deserves a healthy smile. And when we return with Dr. Joe Arante, we will talk about what can I do to prevent or decrease my risk of oral cancer. They're beyond the obvious one that Joe already mentioned about don't smoking, there's many other things Joe will say. Tom Raphael, please return after commercial break. Please stay tuned. Thank you. Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raphael for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and this weekend with me is the amazing Dr. Joe Arante, who's the Vice President of Clinical Strategies and Provider Networks at Northeast Delta Dental. Lives here right in Concord with his family and grandchildren and does a great job for Northeast Delta Dental, and prior to that was the CEO of one of our subsidiaries called Provisor Company that powers the Health Rural Wellness Program, or HOW, which we'll probably allude to shortly. So back to Joe. So beyond the obvious, don't smoke, what else can I do to prevent or decrease my risk of oral cancer?
Well, I think, obviously don't smoke, but and only drink alcohol in moderation. And moderation typically means one drink one or two glasses of wine for a female and two drinks a day for a male. That's probably more than many people drink, but I remember in dental school asking somebody if they drank alcohol, and he said, yes, he did. And then I don't know what possessed me to ask him about how much does he drink, and he said about a quart a day. So that was a little bit more than I was expecting. That wasn't a moderation drinker, a moderate drinker. I think eating a well-balanced diet is very helpful. Limiting exposure to sunlight, having the HPV vaccine during your teen years, and seeing a dentist for screenings for those inspections that I mentioned before, if you're over 40 and especially if you have any risk factors. And I think you can also speak with your dentist about your risk for oral cancer. And the HOW program, as you mentioned in the first segment, has the provisor tool has a risk assessment for oral cancer, but it basically identifies what the risky habits are. And it also will help you then understand the things that you can do to avoid the problem.
Now, you've been in the dental space for many, many years, as I have, so we're kind of grizzly veterans. Have you seen, early on when you were a dentist, have you seen an evolution where the oral cancer screening may not have been as done rigorously or at all to now where they're teaching that in dental schools. There's a risk assessment code for oral cancer. I can't remember exactly when my dentist started, but it seems like at least 20 years. But has there been an evolution where this is now, state of the art and routine, and has that changed from when you first started to practice?
Well, when I first started to practice 40 years ago, it was less routine. It still should be done, particularly in people at high risk. And at that time, it was anybody who was over 40, who smoked, who drank, alcohol in more than moderation, actively or frequently drinking alcohol. And so those people you would screen, but it became kind of a norm, I'd say 15, 20 years ago, mostly because of how we started to view oral health as part of overall health and an important aspect of overall health. And we started taking blood pressures in the office and screening for blood pressure, hypertension, and we started to look more closely at oral cancers. I have actually, I practiced about 20 years, and I've been a dentist for 40 years, and I have actually seen several oral cancers in my clinical career. So they're not super common. I've only seen two or three. So it's not like, you know, you see one every other week. So they're relatively rare, but they do happen. And they can happen, as I mentioned earlier, about a quarter of the time in people that do not smoke or drink.
Just unlucky, or your genetic gene pool. Well, this is really clear, and I'm glad the dental community has, you know, stepped up to the plate and has been doing this, you know, for many years. And you explained it well. Since we did touch on the Health World Wellness Program, or HOW, and since we do have some time, let's perhaps talk a little bit about that program. You were CEO of the Previsor software company with Northeast Delta Dental acquired, and the thinking was that some of us need, you know more than the two cleanings every year, based on, you know, a particular score, as well as other enhanced benefits. You mentioned smoking cessation benefit, but also, you know, things like fluoride varnish. So that concept is because the two cleanings, two visits a year, really wasn't based on science. So how have you seen the evolution of the Previsor software and the Health and Wellness Program, and has it met our goals of getting the care where we need it, and in the long run, at least being cost neutral? Because if the person needs, you know, more cleanings early on in years 1, 2, and 3, it might prevent the bigger ticket items, you know, later. So have you seen this statistically now that we have about 5 or 6 years of experience?
Well, yeah, it certainly has paid off, paid dividends in that people are healthier because of it. Essentially what it's done is it's personalized the benefits and allowed the dentist to do the types of services with the frequency of services that they've always wanted to do from a preventive perspective. And now the benefits align with the services that the dentist wanted to do. And so it's very seamless for people to have that kind of preventive care done. So what we've noticed is that what we hoped for and what we expected to see was an increase in the cost of preventive services, because we are actually doing more preventive services than we did in the past, but an offset and the decrease of kind of the high-ticket invasive things like extractions, surgeries, root canals, crowns, implants, things like that. The things that people really appreciate getting done when they're necessary, but if they could avoid them totally, they'd rather avoid them. And the prevention does pay off in helping to prevent those kinds of services. And from an economic standpoint on the claims cost, it's certainly paid off in that it. But more importantly, it gives the dentist the ability to do the kinds of services that they've always wanted to do with the frequency that they wanted to do it. It helps avoid uncomfortable procedures for the patients, and it's kind of a triple win for everybody.
Yeah, it's one of those as sort of the CEO of the overall company and kind of seeing it all come together. And, you know, Joe's heard me say this many times, but when I go in and get my score and I get my extra cleaning, to see it all happen and it's seamless, there's no paper, it happens quickly, they schedule me for my extra cleaning, they apply the Adel Floyd varnish, all right within the dental office, and except for a very small handful of our group employer customers, everybody has the benefit, and Delta Dental is paying for it. So it also, I think, has improved the patient education, because I know some dental offices will have their hygienist or dentist actually show a printout of the, you know, of the Previsor score or house score. And so it's really been, like you said, a triple win, better oral health for patients. The dentist is able to practice and do the preventative services that she or he had wanted. And then from the employer's perspective, who really pay all the bills, people, we know that, but not everybody understands that the employer really decides how much they want to pay for dental, that if we can keep this, even though we're doing way more preventative treatments, if we can keep the cost down by that preventing the major restorative down the road, it's that, as you say, the triple win. So we don't have a lot of time left. So as you look out there, and if there's a mom or dad listening and their son or daughter is considering dental school, and as you know, a lot of young students really start thinking about that as far back as, you know, eighth grade. We know that from research. But as kids are thinking about it, would you say that while certainly the dental profession, you know, went through its rough patch when between March 16th and May 11th in New Hampshire, they could only see patients for emergencies, but would you still recommend dentistry or becoming a dentist for a young person that's interested in it?
Yeah, I would, Tom, because it's a terrific profession. You get to be, you know, all the things that people say they want to be, which is to help people. You make a really good income. You're comfortable. You can, it's still relatively independent, so you can pick your times of work and things like that. And so it's a really terrific profession. Most importantly, though, is if you're a person that wants to help people and make a good living doing that, that's really an excellent profession, as is hygiene, dental hygiene, and other dental workforce positions. They're all nice. I used to always search for people with terrific personalities and attitudes in restaurants and places like that. And I give my card out often to people who say, would you be interested in not working retail, not working weekends, not working evenings anymore, but working a more regular schedule? If you are, give me a call sometime. And so that's the benefit. And it's we're now seeing many women, you know, around the world, most of the dentists are women. In the United States, it's recently, in the last decade or so, that it's about 50% of the students are women, and it's a terrific job for a woman in particular, because you can, you know, you don't have to trade off career versus parenting. You can do both.
I'm sold. I really am. You and when I speak with dentists, men and women, they love the fact that there's the healing part of it. They get. They take someone with a mouthful of cavities and other issues, and they can turn around their life. And we all know the medical-dental connection and the self-esteem issues. And they like to give back by helping. So I love the way you say that. I know that there are challenges with the debt sometimes the students obtain when they're paying for tuition. But we'll talk about that in a different show. And of course, Northeast Health Dental has many scholarship and loan repayment programs out there, and Joe is, you know, furthering that as well. So we'll have you on. We'll have you again, Dr. Joe, on that. As always, great job, and we'll talk again soon. Thank you for joining me this week, and I know you're a busy guy.
Thank you, Tom.